Okay, let's begin. We've got a number of things during the course of the day. So we don't quite have a quorum, but we're going to start presenting the bills, and then we'll hopefully have a quorum within a minute or so. So let's start with Senator Metzen, Senate File 2386. And there's a division report, but again, we're going to hold on adoption of the division report for a minute, but have presentation of the bill and questions for Senator Metzen.
Thank you.
Did he say to start?
Okay.
Yeah.
What?
Mr. Chairman, Senator members Metzen. Of the committee, Senate File 2386 is a state labor contracts ratification bill. This bill has been, I believe, before three or four committees. These contracts and compensation plans have been reviewed and given interim approval by the LCC Committee on Employee Relations. You'll see that there's 0% increases the first year on all of these plans. The second year, there will be some salary range performance-based step increases, but the first year, there will be no increases at all. These contracts take into consideration about 42,000 state employees or so. There's no substantive changes to the state employee insurance program. The Minnesota management budget estimates that the bargaining agreement plans will cost 0.057 in the first year of the biennium, and most of this small increase is because of the state retirement system plan. I don't know if you want me to go through each and every bargaining unit's steps. I would think we might not have to do that. But the biggest thing, I think, is that these are labor or negotiated contracts by the administration and the people that work for the different agencies, and they bargained collectively for these settlements. So I think with the economy the way it is, I applaud the people that put this agreement together. Times are pretty tough, not only in the state but nationally. And so I think the 0% is right for the first year because of the conditions. And I, for one, certainly like to pay our employees, but I can understand why it was bargained out at zero this time, and I would ask for your support.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Metzen. Senator Betzold moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
We got a quorum now?
No, we do have a quorum.
Okay, then I'll move the division report.
All right. On Senator Betzold's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Metzen, I'm going through the description. I'm not sure we have to go through this unit by unit, but these cover,
Chairman, you have the major, like the colleges, AFSCME, MAPE, all the big ones are included in here. Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, like I said, Middle Management, MNSCU, the managerial plan, law enforcement, nurses. I think it covers everybody. We did settle one last year with MNSCU, and other than that, these are all that remain to be settled.
Now, looking at the back page of what's been distributed by the LCC, there's a percentage increase biennium to biennium, but this reflects where there are increases. This reflects what, the previous bargaining agreement through the end of this next biennium? Is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, the
biennium to biennium increase reflects the cost of this, the impact of this contract on the next biennium on 12-13.
Okay, so that would include the step increases then?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
I'm trying to glance at this. So, Senator Minson, you indicated that there is no unit that has any across-the-board increase for the present year or both years of the biennium?
Which year?
Either year.
Oh. In either year, yeah.
Okay.
Steps take place.
And were there any additional negotiations in any of the units relative to step increases, or was that simply what's been contractually obligated from previous bargaining?
About 50% of these fall into that category, but maybe that are able to do that next year.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen is correct. Their step increases are built into most of the contracts, and they negotiated out the step increase in the first year and left it in for the second year.
And it's actually striking that even taking that into account, I mean, it obviously varies from unit to unit, but there's one that actually shows a decrease over that biennium to biennium figure and others that are well under 1%, even including the step increases. I know some of us, well, I think, Senator Anderson, I'm not sure it's fair to single you out, but you and I have both, because we were in the same meeting where we questioned the increase bargained by the St. Paul School District, and I know that's been an issue around the state. I'm not quite sure why school districts have been unable to do this in difficult times, and every state bargaining unit has felt compelled to do this. And I don't know if that's a concern on the part of other members in your school districts, but
Chairman, I quite frankly made that same observation that we're doing the best we can, I think, in the state level at the zero, and then I pick up the newspaper and I see different school districts and other units of government, counties and some others, and I'm saying, hey, they don't see what's going on out there like we do at the state level, and it troubles me a little bit, but I guess I have no control over that. But we have some control over this one. So,
Mr. Hubinger, this might be unfair because you've got enough to do, but do you have any sense of, on a comparative basis, I just referenced the school districts, and that's had some attention paid to it, any sense on what's going on with cities and counties or other public employee units?
Mr. Chair and members, we don't track them carefully.
Yeah.
We just watch what's in the media and get some of the reports from the associations. And depending on the local government's financial situation, the increases are all over the map.
So some are making are bargaining increases, some are not?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
It raises other questions for this committee. When we deal with Senator Stumpf's not here, I think his division's meeting right now. But when we start looking at the other kinds of issues that are brought in front of us, such as the K-12 bill and what we do with foundation aid, but I know what Senator Anderson and I, well, again, this time I'm not going to speak for you, Senator Anderson, but I know what I mentioned, we met with the St. Paul school folks, and there's an article, I think, this morning in the St. Paul newspaper about the cuts that the St. Paul school district is going to have to impose. And we made it clear that there was no guarantee they were going to get any help from us to make up that difference. And I also made the comment that I wouldn't be supporting a referendum at this point in St. Paul. I mean, our property taxes are difficult enough as it is. And I've supported all the past referendums. And I don't know if this is kind of a message, Senator Metzen, to other levels of government, but if they think that they can bargain increases and then come here and have us make up the difference, maybe it'll happen in 5 or 6 years. It's not going to happen in the next couple of years. We just don't have that ability. So I'm kind of glancing around. I don't see anybody here from the bargaining units, but in a difficult period of time, and it's not that, and state employees and these other employees do a great job. It's helpful to have the help in that respect. Senator Murphy?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we ought to probably move along. Not much we can do about the school districts and what they're going to do, but we can pass this bill and tell those folks they did a good job. And, you know, we all appreciate our state employees, so let's pass this bill and not worry about things we don't have any control over.
Well, Senator Murphy, that was my point. We do have control over it because they're going to be coming to us indicating that they're in deficit and asking us for more money. So, yes, we do have control over it in that
we
respect.
We don't have any, Mr. Chairman.
That was my point.
Okay.
It's pretty easy to solve then.
So, other questions for Senator Metzen?
I just wanted, Mr. Chairman, just reaffirm what Senator Murphy said about we have wonderful state employees, and I get around, we all do, and we're thankful for the efforts and the work that they do, but and they've agreed to help us with the problem. So I applaud them and applaud their work. So things get better, we'll review things.
Further questions or comments on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill.
Senator Murphy moves that Senate File 2386 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Senator Metzen. I see Senator Sparks. Senator Sparks, Senate File 364. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for taking the time to hear Senate File 364. This is a carryover bill from last year, and as Minnesotans put an increasing focus on water quality restoration and protection, drainage management is increasingly important. The Drainage Work Group has been able to bring many different stakeholder perspectives together to identify consensus recommendations for improved drainage management. The bill passed out of the Environmental Policy Committee last year, also the Ag and Veterans Committee, and this year it was heard in Senator Anderson's Budget Division. And with me today is Mr. Al Kane with the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, and he can go into more detail on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Al Kane. I serve as the Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I also serve as the facilitator for the Stakeholder Drainage Work Group. And the bill before you is one that carries recommendations from the work group to update two sections of drainage law that pertain to impoundments and wetland restorations, for example, on drainage systems. And the work group is recommending some modifications to clarify and to also enable better partnerships, if you will, between landowners, programs, and drainage systems. I won't go into all the details on that, but certainly we'll take questions if you have them. But I would like to also point out that another piece of the recommendations of the drainage work group are in regard to updating some of the dollar limits and thresholds within drainage law. And those recommendations are based upon inflation since those numbers were last modified, and also to be in concert with the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law. Another aspect of these recommendations is to provide in statute authority for the Board of Water and Soil Resources to continue to facilitate stakeholder drainage coordination. Those are the three key parts of what this bill does. And I would certainly entertain any questions you might have in that regard.
Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, is the bill before us because the bill originally had an appropriation which has now been deleted?
Mm-hmm. That's what Mr. Mosman
said. So there's probably not anything else within this jurisdiction.
No.
Well,
so
move the bill down.
Yeah. Get her out of here.
All right.
What are you doing here?
Senator Fredrickson.
Did we adopt the division report?
Yes.
Yeah, we did. Further questions?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate File 364 as amended be recommended to pass.
All right. Senator Betzel moves Senate File 364 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. I don't see. Thank you, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't see Senator Putnam Solon.
I do see Senator Anderson.
Okay, Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson, Senate File 2564. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is Senate File 2564. This is the Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriations and the recommendation from the Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council to the legislature appropriating those dollars. The total amount of appropriation in this bill is $58.9 million. That's the sales tax revenue. As you'll recall, for the Legacy Fund, a third of the Outdoor Legacy Fund dollars are distributed to the Outdoor Heritage Fund for the purposes of protecting, enhancing, and restoring habitat. And let me just give you a quick overview of the spending in the bill. It breaks down to a few categories that are based on the constitutional categories. For prairies, a little over $18 million in spending. In forests, $5.6 million in protect, restore, and enhance activities. In wetlands, $16.9 million. And general habitat, $17.5 million. Those are very broad categories that, and I can go into any more detail as members would like. But since this is a finance committee, I won't go through it project by project unless you'd like me to. Mr. Chair, I just want to make a few sort of summary comments about this recommendation. This is my second, this is the second round of appropriations from the council, and my second round at participating in that as a member. And I think this process was an extremely good one. And last year, it was a very compressed during session process that was put together quickly given deadlines. And so for the second round, we were able to really take some time to spend on setting priorities. And, well, one thing that I'm really proud of is that we put some language in law last year that directed the council to move towards setting priorities for different ecological regions of the state. And I think that was a very, very constructive process. We had meetings around the state and heard from conservation professionals and interested citizens and stakeholders from each region to set priorities for each region of the state. And then our RFP was based on those priorities for each region of the state. And I think the result is a really balanced and effective package to meet the needs of different habitat priorities of the state of Minnesota. There's a summary document that you have in your packet that looks like this, that goes through some of the highlights, and it lists the projects in brief format and some other charts that sort of break down the spending and the priorities, which I'll let you look at. A couple more things I wanted to comment on is that there's a great deal of leverage with these dollars. Overall, every dollar that we are proposing spending here leverages 63 cents. So it brings in a lot of dollars, some federal and some other sources. Projects are located in 82 of the 87 counties. In the metro area, I know in last year's allocation, there was some concern that the metro area was not prioritized. And I think that the process of looking at regional needs really helped us to focus on the needs of the metro area as well as the northeast part of the state and the southeast part of the state, which didn't get as much attention either. And it allowed us to really focus on priorities statewide. So I think we have some really good priorities in a number of different regions of the state in this bill, and there's very good balance. I'm especially excited about our work to protect the major rivers and the habitat along the major rivers that do converge in this area, the Minnesota, the St. Croix, and the Mississippi River, and I think that's a really exciting project, a couple of projects that meet that criteria. I think I'll just leave my comments at that and allow our chair, Mike Kilgore, who's a professor at the University of Minnesota in forestry and chairs the council in his spare time, and we have Bill Becker, our executive director of the council, who serves as our staff, who I'm not sure if has comments or is just here to answer questions. I guess the other thing I forgot to mention is that we did leave a reserve in place as we did last year, and our intention is, I think it's 10%, roughly.
Five.
five, sorry, because, and we can talk about that in more detail, the income on the sales tax was down because of the recession, but not down as much as income tax is down. It's proved to be a more stable funding source, but we are proposing keeping a reserve for 2 years at all times, and so this would be the second year reserve, and we would add those together to keep a reserve in place just to allow for fluctuations in funding, and then in future years we could just add, you know, keep that sort of revolve that reserve.
I had a question about that, Senator Anderson. So the reserve that's reflected in this, which is the is what, about $5 million roughly, or $4 million? I saw that.
Why don't you speak, if you would, to the Mr. Becker? Maybe I'd like to have him answer.
4.186 is the number, I think. So is that, has that been augmented, or is that carried forward from last year?
Mr. Chair, the reserve from last year, which started out at $7 million and is now $5 million, is carried forward along with the reserve against the receipts for FY11, which is the $4 million that you just discussed. The plan is to.
Ms. Becker, I'm not sure you identified yourself for the record. If that's
my
okay.
Apologies. William Becker, Executive Director of the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council.
So the reserve you have, so in terms of how you're carrying this, you have a reserve appropriated this year, a request in the appropriation of the 4.2, and that'll be on top of the reserve from the previous year?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And Mr. Chair, we attempted to reserve 10% last year, but with the lower income from the sales right. tax, it turned out to be a lower number.
As you point out, the sales tax revenue forecast has certainly decreased since last year's session, since, you know, the forecast of the previous year, but not by a huge amount. So I am assuming you didn't have to go into the reserve this past year. If you did, it was just for a small amount?
Mr. Chair, our reserve started out at $7.7 million. And as of the November forecast, it was $5.6 million.
Okay. All right. So there was a little bit of it that was used. And if I can, well, maybe I should ask Professor Kilgore if you wanted to testify first.
Just very briefly, just to maybe.
And again, if you could identify
yourself.
Sorry.
My name is Mike Kilgore. I'm the chair of the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Just want to elaborate on a couple points that Senator Anderson made. And first of all, I want to say that as a chair of the council, I'm very proud to be a council member and to stand behind this package. I do think it's a very effective package of work for Habitat in Minnesota. The process has been very deliberative. As Senator Anderson mentioned, the first year we were really moving quickly to get our first set of recommendations. We spent the better part of 2009 developing a process, as Senator Anderson mentioned. We engaged over 150 of the state's best scientists and natural resource managers around the state in these five habitat sections to identify the greatest habitat needs, what the spending needs are related to those. We reviewed over 30 habitat and resource management plans. We engaged the public. We had opportunities at every one of our council meetings for public comment on what the priority needs are through our website. So what you see before you, I just want to reinforce what has been said before, that this is the result of months of work by the council, and I believe a very deliberative and a process that will really move us down the road towards improving the habitat in the state.
And, Mr. Chair, I didn't acknowledge Senator Ingebrigtsen is the other Senate member of the council. I should point that out. And I think there are some members, other members here. They came on. Okay, we had at least one member the other day, that whatever that day that was, Monday, but he couldn't come back.
Okay. And Professor Kilgore, maybe Mr. Becker, I'm not sure who to ask. Senator Langseth is fond of. When he presents his bonding bill, he says, you know, we had $10 billion in requests, and we've been able to fund about $300 million. So I note that someplace here you show the requests on your summary. I'm just curious as to the aggregation of the original request versus the recommendations.
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. On the front page of the summary document, we list 42 proposals were received requesting more than $185 million.
Okay. And if I can ask, because I know that obviously this is the first time you've had a solid year of work. What's been the process? I mean, does the commission meet once a month? How are you handling just the process of this thing?
Senator Cohen and commissioner and members, it's really focused on time outside legislative session. So we haven't met since early January when we forwarded our recommendations to you. But during the summer months, we spent our time in outstate Minnesota. We visited every one of the sections, these habitat sections. So we had meetings in Grand Rapids, Fergus Falls, Alexandria, Rochester, the Twin Cities. We had field tours in conjunction with a business meeting. So most meetings were 1 to 2 days. We had several meetings in the fall for work leading up to our final set of recommendations, including reviewing the 42 proposals, hearing a subset of those, and then making decisions about which programs we would be recommending for funding. So most of our work has been in meetings from May through January of this past year.
So the folks who are serving on this, the non-legislators, are spending quite a bit of time.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And we have members, you know, from Worthington, Minnesota, to Perham, and points in between. So, you know, and these people have businesses that they run or farms or whatever. And so it does obviously take time out of their day to come to the St. Paul or wherever we're meeting.
And when we established the commission, well, actually we established the commission 2 years ago, but when we, or the council 2 years ago, but when we, we're in the process of funding now. We had that special interim legislation to provide bridge money. You mentioned the utilization of consultants. What kind of a budget is being used for the council itself? Ms. Becker?
Mr. Chair, in this appropriation is an administrative budget of $600,000. The staff of the council itself is $335,000. The meeting expenses are $51,500. The total other office expenses is $43,000. The total consulting, planning, and evaluation is $170,000.
Mr. Chair, I believe we're following a statutory guideline of 1%, less than 1% administrative costs, which is very small, very frugal, and the council has managed to live within that budget.
And I assume there's also, a per diem for citizen members of some sort? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
The statutory amount. Other questions from committee members? Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to make an observation. I believe the per diem for this for the Outdoor Heritage Council is the standard per diem. Is it $55 now that citizen members are?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, for citizen members, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, the point I would make is that for this Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage, and also for the citizen members of LCCMR, those citizen members put in an enormous amount of time and work to understand the proposals, to develop priorities. The state of Minnesota gets a real bargain for the expertise that these citizens bring to these councils and develop these proposals.
And not only that, but their per diem is significantly less than the legislators' per diem who serve on the...
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. You know, sometime in the future, I think perhaps we should address that, but now is probably not the time to do
that. Possibly
have
the legislators at the citizen level for the purpose of these meetings.
Mr. Chairman, that would be one proposal that would not be mine.
other questions for...
delve into that discussion, Mr. Chair. One thing I forgot to mention is the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program. I should just point that out, that we set aside $4.3 million in the recommendations for small grants, for the small grants program, and this is something that, again, was required by statute, that there's a great deal of support for the idea that very small projects could get a separate pot of money that they could apply for through a separate grant program, which at this point is being administered by the DNR.
And I also want to ask you, I forgot, you made reference to the matching funds. You indicated there was some federal money. What are the other kinds of matching funds that are received through the council? Mr. Becker, do you?
Mr. Chair, in some cases, for example, Trout Unlimited, their national chapter matches. Ducks Unlimited brings match. Nature Conservancy, I'm not able at this point to name them all, but the non-governmental organizations who are assisting us often bring matches to the table. Some of these matches are in kind, some are in cash.
But it's primarily the service organizations and those directly. Is there any avenue for anything like foundation money or anything of that sort? Or is that just beyond the scope of, or not beyond the scope, but foundations would be interested, but it's not quite in their mission.
Mr. Chair, there not only is an avenue for that, but I happened to talk yesterday with the Trout Unlimited manager, and he recently received National Fish and Wildlife Foundation money to go into the Coldwater Streams program as an example.
Getting back to the process question I had, so we approve Senator Anderson's bill. Obviously, the governor, constitutional money, can't change the appropriations. Do you then start the next year's process the moment we're finished? You start May 1st, or what?
Mr. Chair and members, yes. The intent is to have our call for proposals out around June 1st. That's moving it up a bit, even from this past year, where we had a call going out in September, reviewing proposals in October, in November and December, and making recommendations in January. We're trying to move the process up a bit more.
And, Mr. Chair, there's also a 25-year strategic planning process that we've required also by law, and that will go forward in the next, this summer and fall as well in the council.
Okay. Well, Senator Betzel.
Mr. Chair, just a clarification, you indicated the governor could not line item veto veto the appropriations. I mean,
I'm sorry, I missed that. He could veto, but it would fall to the bottom line.
Right. It'd stay within the account.
Yes, that's what I meant to say.
Correct. Mr. Chair?
Senator
Anderson. I've been asked to make a very small amendment, and I forgot about this. It's on page 11. It relates to the Conservation Partners Grant Program, and there's a word pilot. It describes it as a pilot program, and I think that's kind of leftover from the first year, and we should just delete that pilot program. It gives some people heartburn. Okay. It's at the very, it's page 11, line 36. I have the right.
So, Senator Anderson, you're moving to?
To delete the word pilot.
And leave for a program?
It would be for a program, correct.
Senator Anderson moves deletion of the word pilot, page 11, line 1136. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion or questions on the part of committee members?
All right, Mr. Chair, if there's no further questions, I'd like to move that Senate File 2564 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Okay, and on that motion, just before, and with, I know because there are, were citizen members here and other citizens involved with this a couple days ago, sorry for the inability to hear it, but obviously wanted to get this out as quickly as we could, but that's unfortunately at times how this place works. So on Senator Anderson's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Chair
you.
And members.
Thank you.
And finally on the agenda, we have Senator Pretner Solon. I believe the first time in the years I've been in the legislature that I've been able to hear a tattoo bill. So.
Actually, Mr. Chair, you heard this last year.
That's what we heard
year
last
too.
Year. That's right.
Body art.
Body art.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, there you go.
Senator Murphy, I apologize. Senator Pappas moves adoption of the division report, which is, I think, actually a delete all amendment, mm-hmm. but all those in favor of the division report signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is legislation actually that's been around for about 3 years. It's been modified significantly. It came to this committee last year and then back to the Health and Human Service Budget Division. And there was a request for the department to do a study and make recommendations about how to do regulation of the tattoo and body piercing parlors and the technicians. And this is the result of that study, a number of stakeholder meetings, and it also resembles the Wisconsin legislation that was passed last year or recently. And it's here for its fiscal note, and it's contained within the special revenues account. And I am assured by the department that after that it pays for itself in the first 5 years, that after 5 years there should be about a $15,000 surplus in the account. And the fee schedule is in Section 10 of the bill on page 17.
Okay, and Senator Pinder-Solon, the fee schedule apparently matches up to the appropriation you have.
Actually, there's a small surplus in the first year, fiscal year 2011. There is a cost in fiscal year 12, a much smaller cost in fiscal year 13, and then in fiscal year 14, it shows a $15,000 surplus. Mr. Hindlemeyer is here if you need to.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, and it's in the special revenue account. Or the division report?
We're working off the division report. It's a delete all. Do you have that, Senator Paraso?
I have both of them. I just okay. Wanted which. Thank you.
And Reaper Cuff, the third encouragement.
Other questions on Senator Pretner-Solon? Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pretner-Solon, there's a small amount of branding that's done in radiation centers so that they can center the equipment that they're to the part of the body that is being radiated. Is that our health facilities exempted from this? Or if you do branding, do you have to be licensed?
I would assume, Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, that they already meet the requirements through their education. And
are we licensing individuals or are we licensing businesses?
Oh, but they are exempted in this bill anyway.
They're exempted. Okay.
I'll move the bill.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I do have some questions. I have a business owner in my district who's here who's been working very hard with Senator Pretner-Solon and the House author on this bill, and I really appreciate the time that they've spent trying to accommodate Ms. Nolan's concerns. But I just had a couple questions just to make sure I understand. I know you've made a lot of changes. Can you just talk briefly about the disciplinary provisions and the fines that could be assessed for violations? I guess sections 8 and 10.
Okay. Mr. Chair, these are the standard disciplinary practices in the department. It did go through judiciary, and Mr. Hindlemeyer is here. He could address those if you have any specific questions about that.
I think the questions that I was looking at specifically were about, will tattoo artists have to pay license fees to both the state and to their local city or whoever their local authority is? And will they have to pay for a permit for their business, both to the state and the city? One question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, those localities that already have regulation of tattoo parlors and the technicians would be exempt from this legislation, or they would be exempt from the paying the fee. Excuse me, it's the establishment that would be exempt. The technician would still have to meet the standards of the bill.
So that they would have to pay license fees to both the state and the local government?
Well,
if the local requires that.
If the local jurisdiction requires that.
And so what happens if there's different standards at the local and state level? Is there if there's already an existing
Mr. Chair, may I have Vic Moore, who's representing the blood banks and the Red Cross, and has a particular interest because this affects our blood supply. Mm-hmm. People who are getting tattoos in unregulated facilities cannot donate blood for a year after they have their tattoo or body piercing. So he has a particular interest in seeing that that blood supply isn't interrupted.
Mr. Moore?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Vic Moore from the firm of Franzen & Moore, and I represent the American Red Cross. And as Senator Prettner Solon said, our interest in strong support of this bill was because if you've had your body pierced, either by tattoo or some other piercing method, you are not able to donate blood for 12 months unless you have statewide regulation that requires single-use needles, single-use ink, and bloodborne pathogen training. Many localities now have regulation, but it doesn't qualify as statewide regulation. So what this legislation does is put some minimum standards statewide. It doesn't prevent localities from going beyond those standards. Currently, Hennepin County has standards that goes beyond this. City of Minneapolis does. City of St. Paul does. So all the localities would have to do is meet the minimum requirements in this law, but it's my understanding that many of them go beyond this already.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Harrison.
I know one issue that comes up when you put a law like this in place, a state law, that even if, you know, in some cases the standards, I don't know if they're higher or lower, but they just might be different. And so, it makes it hard as a business to be able to follow different requirements at the local level and the state level. So how does that work out?
Again, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, the department might be able to better explain this, but this incorporated much of what some of the counties, Hennepin and Anoka in particular, did, and it streamlined it. So the assumption is that they will, I suspect there isn't any locality that hasn't already met these minimum requirements, and that's all they would have to do under the state law. Obviously, if the city or the county in its wisdom decided that they wanted to do more, they would also have to meet that. But they will qualify and meet the blood donor requirements that the Red Cross is after, just but the minimum requirements in this statute.
And Mr. Chair,
Anderson.
I think there's an apprenticeship program that's set up here that is required for to become licensed. You have to do an apprenticeship time period. And I guess the question that's brought to my attention is, are these apprentices employees? Do they have to, by law, so that they'd be entitled to minimum wages and things like that? The 200 hours they're working for this tattoo technician?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, I think that was deleted from the version of the bill we have now, but the answer to that would be no. They wouldn't be required to be employees and treated as employees. But
can we clarify whether that was deleted or not, Mr. Chair? That would be helpful information.
I don't see anything.
If you could identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, I'm Tom Hendelmeyer, Director of the Health Occupations Program in the Health Department. The apprenticeship provision that was in the bill has been deleted. There is, however, two areas in which an individual who is not previously licensed or is not an owner-operator is subject to supervision and a training period. So there is provision for a person with absolutely no experience coming into the profession and being under supervision. They may or may not be an employee. It would be dependent upon the arrangement between the owner-operator and the individual.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Hindelman?
Hendelmeyer,
would you have to do that apprenticeship to become licensed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, in order to become licensed, you would have to go through a period of supervision for approximately a year.
But
there is a grandparenting provision that's applicable to individuals who can demonstrate 200 hours of experience or a year. I'm confusing things. It's a year of experience. And you get your license. A person who's never been licensed before and is newly coming into the field has a experience a supervision period of 200 hours.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir, move.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Solon, now what was the fiscal impact of this bill again?
The fiscal impact is that the bill pays for itself in 5 years.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd move the bill then.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pretner Solon, are any of your witnesses? There's a term here I don't know that I've seen before. It's pre-sterilized. Why don't we just say sterilized? It's on page 1, line 31. Body piercing does not include the piercing of the outer perimeter of the lobe of the ear using pre-sterilized single-use stud and clasp ear piercing systems. Why don't we just say sterilized? Or is pre-sterilized, is that a term of art or a common term in the health field?
It's
Mr. Engelmeyer, can you?
Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson, which line are you looking at, please?
Line 31, page 1, line 31 of the division report.
Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson, I believe that's a term of art. This particularly applies to the exemption of ear piercings from this chapter in the statute and the regulations.
Chair, Mr. Peter, I'm in committee. I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name.
Hindlemeyer.
I don't understand why we don't just say sterilized, and it's not a big deal, but pre-sterilized, so sterilization is defined in the definitions, but pre-sterilized is not.
Well, Senator Cohen and Senator Frederickson, I think the term pre-sterilized refers to items which come packaged and are sterilized, as opposed to objects which are sterilized through a chemical or autoclaving process.
Chairman, I'm not going to pursue this any further. My question is, why don't we just say sterilized and leave it up to the...
It's like pre-use sterilized.
Mr. Chair, members, I was going to say approximately the same thing that the witness said. That I think it's pre-sterilized before it gets to the clinic or to the. It's purchased sterilized, so it's not sterilized on site. It's pre-sterilized and packaged and ready to go when it gets to the clinic.
Probably used in jewelry stores when they do ear piercings as well.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think this discussion is kind of beyond the purview of the Finance Committee. This bill, I assume, has been in Health Committee, possibly even Commerce Committee. I know that there's been a lot of meetings with people who have concerns. I'm sure that Senator Pretner Solon would continue to want to meet with people if there are still some remaining concerns that could be addressed with a floor amendment. But I do think that it's not our job here to be asking questions about the definition of sterilization. We're here as a finance committee.
If members have a question, we can ask questions. But
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Frederickson,
Senator Pappas, it's an educational opportunity for those of us who don't have the privilege of serving on the health committee.
That's okay. Senator Frederickson feels properly chastised by you, Senator Pappas. Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know that Senator Pretner Solon and the House author have worked with my local business owner, and I appreciate that, as I said. I think that I have this long list of detailed questions she has and some specific concerns still remaining on this bill. And I understand that right now is probably not the time to go into those, as Senator Pappas said, so she won't scold me. But
really, that's why I was scolding.
I would like to just ask Senator Pretner Solon if we can try to discuss these and see if there's anything else that can be done to accommodate these concerns. I don't know that Ms. Nolan wants to speak right now, or she does. Okay. Could we ask her to just come forward and make a comment?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we should move the bill and let those folks work this out.
Well, Senator Anderson is requesting some brief testimony. We could have a minute or so of testimony.
Okay.
Ms. Nolan, did you wish to testify for a minute? If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, I'm hard of hearing. Thank you. My name is Tanika Nolan. I am an owner with my husband at Acme Tattoo for over 22 years. I have wanted regulations for the tattoo industry for many years. Certainly the bill is not perfect, but because they're willing to finally acknowledge not tattooing of minors, I'm willing to compromise on some things. Maybe as time progresses, we can see the laws separate the body arts further and making it stronger for public safety and industry fairness. I do agree that the law is becoming better. I acknowledge that with the blood banks, they need three things, which is real minimal, which I believe everybody is doing. Almost every county in Minnesota is regulated. The biggest research we've done in all the troubles relating just to tattooing, which I want to say thank you for separating us with tattooing, which is a different entity than all others, is minors. And that's everything that came up. All our surrounding states have laws that do not do tattoo minors. I'm only talking about tattooing. This is passionate to my heart. We have safeguards in place for children, and there's a reason for that. Their skin is not growing. They're not mentally or emotionally ready to get tattooed. I'm not saying at age 30 we're ready either, but hopefully we'll know that, you know? And we educate. And I've educated for 22 years with that and other things, and for safe tattooing practices. I am for the law. I am for the things. I'm for what the blood bank needs. Senator Pretner Solon, that's a hard one, has worked diligently on this along with several other, Tim Mahoney, John Lesh, Senator Ellen Anderson, for several years. And finally, we're getting somewhere. And I really, really, really want to say thank you. And I'm more than happy to work with everybody to achieve our goals. But I do notice that we can tattoo a baby again now in the information that I got. And I don't appreciate that part. It's in this here, paragraph B, prohibits a technician from tattooing or piercing on any individual under the age of 18 without parental consent. Nipple or genital piercing or tattooing is prohibited on any individual under the age of 18, regardless of parental consent. So there we go again, tattooing a baby, you know, which was a challenge last year, which I can't support that. I'm sure it's just maybe a typo. I'm not sure. And I'm more than willing to work out some things with that.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate your ability to be here. Further questions, comments, discussion on the part of the committee? Mr. Watson.
I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, there's a technical curiosity with the division report and that provision that the witness was just talking about. It's just the numbering of the subdivision. It's on page 13, line 29. That subdivision 1A was apparently added in division. When we're putting a new subdivision into existing law, we'll call it a 1A in order to avoid having to renumber the existing law. But in a brand new bill like this, if we add a new subdivision, we should probably be calling that subdivision 2 and then renumbering the remaining subdivisions and correcting the internal references.
If Senator Pappas will not chastise counsel, she would make that motion. Is that correct, Senator Pappas?
Well, I have another question, though. On 1329, is this what she's talking about? I'm trying to read it. It says the technician may perform body piercings. That's body piercing, so that's different from 1334, but shall no tattooing.
Yes, I believe that's what it says.
Right, okay.
Yes.
All right, then I'll move the amendment,
okay.
Whatever it was.
So, Mr. Chairman, the amendment would be on page 13, line 29, delete 1A and insert 2.
Okay.
And then on page 14, line 31, delete 1A and insert 2 and renumber the subdivisions in sequence.
Senator Pappas has graciously made the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Aye. Motion carries. Further discussion or comments? Senator Murphy has moved that Senate File 525 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Members, that concludes the committee meeting. For the members here, when we get back from the break, we'll be able to schedule bills coming from the divisions. We'll probably have a meeting Monday for any omnibus policy bills. Is that correct?
I think. Well, you can't do all those on the age of 18, regardless of parental consent.
Pulling teeth.
We're not sure. Stay tuned. In the meantime, committee adjourned.
Okay.